Baltimore, and he's now in the hospital. We hope that he and all the Chayyala Yisrael should have a Rafua Shleima. It's interesting, I just was learning a Gemara, not related to this. I was just learning as part of something, a regular share. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin was discussing the great miraculous victory. After Sancheirib, the king of Assyria, had exiled the 10 tribes, he then went south to conquer Yerushalayim. And it looked very bad. Sancheirib was the most powerful king in the world, and the 10 tribes were much more numerous. And they were vanquished and exiled. And at the gates of Yerushalayim was on the verge of utter destruction. But a miracle happened. It was the first night of Pesach, that the 185,000 soldiers of Sancheirib miraculously died in a plague. And the Lashon of the Pasuk is, there was a Nevuah given to Sancheirib, V'chubal ol mipnei shemen, which is a very difficult Pasuk to translate. The Pasuk literally means, the yoke shall be broken because of the oil. So what does that mean? The yoke shall be broken because of the oil. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, because of the midnight oil that Chizkiyahu, who was a very righteous king, made everybody learn Torah late into the night, that also was the great sechus that broke the yoke of oppression of Sancheirib. So once again, I know that in Eretz Yisrael presently, and you know, we're embroiled in the great controversy of military service versus learning and everything else. But you know, the bottom line is we need both. The bottom line is that our chayalim are moser nefesh for Am Yisrael, and they deserve deep, deep hakaras hatov. And we need the spiritual zuchus of Talmud Torah, for which also we must endeavor to incorporate and have hakaras hatov for that as well. You can't look at things in an either or sense. And Be'ezras Hashem, the spiritual kolach of Torah, together with the hishtadlus of a wonderful army, should hopefully give us the siyata d'shmaya that we need. Again, it's this is a small country, and therefore, even if, you know, people say, "Well, look at the different, you know, look at the comparative losses," Baruch Hashem, losses have not been huge in numbers. But what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that a nefesh achas miYisrael is an olam malay. And in a small country like Israel, even in a physical sense, you know, probably everybody knows somebody who knows somebody that is connected to a person who died. So it really is always a tragedy for all of us. And again, so as I said on Sunday, and again, forgive me for repeating it. You know, there's a silver lining to the tzaras that Kol Yisrael faces, because you know, I don't want to pontificate politically too much, and I'm not going to do that at all. I would be a right amateur in any way, but the point is, you know, the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, the Jews of the world, are put into a situation where it's apparent that there is no political solution to the situation that we're in. There is nothing we can do. We disengage for peace, and we have this. We don't disengage, there would be something else. And when a person realizes the depth and the magnitude of their helplessness, the positive aspect is that you know that it's only a Kodesh Baruch that can really help. So in many, many ways, when we know there's nothing we can do, then in a sense we turn to Hashem with much more strength. They tell a story about the Briska Rav. You know, the Briska Rav of Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik was in the Warsaw Ghetto during the Holocaust. And you know, miraculously, he was one of the very few that managed to be saved. And the Briska Rav generally had what you might call a nervous temperament, meaning he was always worried. He would say Shema many times to be sure it came from his Yerusha mind that he was Yotzei the Mitzvah. There's a whole thing about how briskers bake matzah to this very day. It's kind of a very, very long, drawn out, difficult process. And yet, in the middle of the Warsaw Ghetto, he seemed to be very, very calm, collected, nothing bothered him. People were dying all around him. There was no food. And somebody had the nerve to ask the Rav, you know, Rebbe, I don't know how he said it exactly, you're always so nervous, like now there's something to be nervous about, like, why are you so calm? And he said, he's nervous when he has the responsibility, you know, when it comes to a mitzvah, so because he knows he fails, he's not perfect. But when you're in a matzav, where there's nothing you can do that's really going to make a difference, and you're really totally in the hands of God, at that point you can be calm, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is is taking over. And this is, I think, what we see in all of this. Because politically, there is really nothing. I mean, Israel, over the years, has done every possible thing, and much more than any reasonable step, to make shalom. And there are no takers. So at this point, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that will fight our wars for us. Okay, what I wanted to talk about tonight is a little bit off the beaten track. Normally we do Rav Avadya Yosef. Tonight I'm going to do something from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. If I may say so, though, this psak will be in the spirit of Rav Avadya. Rav Avadya is generally known to be a tremendous megal in halacha. And tonight, too, I'll be discussing kulos, although I could not find a direct tshuva from Rav Avadya on this particular issue. And that is the problem. And, of course, I work with Otzameach, which, is a Kirov Rechokim institution. And that is any Kirov organization or even private people, right? You want to connect to people who are not religious. You want to, and one of the best ways of getting people interested in Yiddishkeit is to involve them in a Shabbos meal or a Shabbos activity or a Shabbaton or some type of program. It may involve, shiurim, organized shiurim. It may just involve a Shabbos meal. It may be a social event, and we'll see if these are different, like a bar mitzvah or a sheva brachos. And the question, of course, becomes that if they are going to drive or if they're going to desecrate Shabbos in the process of responding to your invitations or your programming, are you allowed, as it were, to create programming that will almost inevitably entail the desecration of Shabbos? And we're going to discuss, what is the issue here, what are the prohibitions, what are the heterim, and what types of events are justifiable and what types of events are not justifiable. Now, I will tell you, just to give you a bottom line in case, at least you walk away with the bottom line, that like most inyanim m'psak halacha, it's a machlokas. That's kind of safe, What do they say? If you have to take a test in smicha, for smicha, right, so I'll give you a smicha test, whoever, Men, in America, even women can take smicha tests, as it were. So, if you want to play it safe, any shayla you're asked, just say machlokas, and you'll at least get half credit, for that particular, issue. But at least I want you to understand the shorish of the machlokas and what these inyanim are about. First of all, let me just make a general observation. And that is, people sometimes think that the ends justify the means. Meaning if you're trying to make somebody religious, everything goes out the window and you can do whatever needs to be done. They will even use the argument, which actually on some level is not a bad argument, that saving somebody from sin and making somebody a religious Jew is a matter of pikuach nefesh. Right now, if somebody's physical, this is the argument they might make, but it's not halachically valid. The argument is, if saving somebody's physical life, I override Shabbos, I override kashrus, then to save somebody's spiritual life, I certainly should be allowed to do that. And as a result, they have the attitude, and there are outreach workers that have this attitude, that for kirov rechokim you can violate any aveira because it's considered to be a matter of pikuach nefesh. Well, let me just say at the outset that although I can understand the logic of that argument, it's not totally illogical, but it happens to be incorrect, and that much we can say as a certainty, that we do not consider the idea of bringing people to Yiddishkeit a pikuach nefesh situation halachically that would justify transgression of Isser. And in a more basic vein, Chazal tell us, Chosamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes, the seal of Hashem is truth. You cannot bring people to Torah by violating the Torah. You cannot bring people to God by doing things against the Ratzon of Hashem. Because that wouldn't be Yiddishkeit. That would be kind of your version of, what's spiritual and what's good. And this is what the Mefarshim call Ziyuf HaTorah. Ziyuf HaTorah literally means the forgery of the Torah. That is, when a person attempts to misrepresent what halacha permits in order to make it more palatable, more delightful, easier to accept. Now, obviously, there are things you tell a person and things you don't tell a person. You don't have to tell a person things that they're not able to live with right now. But you don't lie. You cannot misrepresent what the Torah says. That is called a ziyuf haTorah. And according to the Maharshal, one of the great, great early Achronim, ziyuf haTorah, you even have to give up your life. It's very interesting. He says that even though normally you could violate the Torah for pikuach nefesh, but you cannot misrepresent what the Torah says, even if you would die for it. There's a word from the Briska Rav. I don't want to get into the text, but the Briska Rav has a very interesting proof that you cannot break halacha, even if that means that you will delay the coming of Mashiach for an indeterminate amount of time. He says even to bring Mashiach. Now he brings interesting proof. You see from the Gemara that Mashiach can come any moment that the collective merit of Am Yisrael reaches a certain level. Now, that level can change from minute to minute, meaning to say, if Mashiach could come at 8:10, Mashiach might not be able to come at 8:11, because the Averis and the Mitzvahs change. Now, the Gemara says, Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos. And the reason why Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos is that since Mashiach is coming from Shemayim, or coming far away, so he's more than 2,000 amos away from Yerushalayim or whatever it is, so there's a prohibition of going beyond a Tuchum Shabbos. So Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos because he would be violating the halachas of Tuchum. That's a Gemara. Now, the question is this. But if, for example, the collective merit of Am Yisrael to bring Mashiach happens to occur on Shabbos, and that collective merit might change, and it may not be back at the right place, maybe for months, for years, who knows? So l'chaira, there's a possibility by not coming on Shabbos, the geula will be delayed for a very long time. The answer is, the Briska Rav says, so what? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you a halacha, you must follow the halacha, even if you're going to delay the coming of Mashiach. Yeah, I just want to say, I do not want to talk about the coming of Mashiach. That's not my topic. So I'm giving you I'm just using this to prove another point. And that other point is simply that the halacha has to be inviolate even if it will delay the coming of Mashiach. Now, if you're going to ask me, I thought Mashiach is already on earth and he's not coming from the heavens, those are in fact good questions. And who says Mashiach is going to come chutz l'tchum? Maybe Mashiach is already in Yerushalayim. Good questions. But that's not what I'm going to talk about tonight. Yeah. Before I get to the specific question, people sometimes say, well, if you present Yiddishkeit as difficult, if you tell people they can't drive, if you tell people they can't do this, and that, then they're not going to want to become religious. You have to kind of give them all of these leniencies. Well, the short answer is that our job is to follow Hashem's Torah. Now, if Hashem's Torah is not attractive enough to make people religious, then that's the Ribbono Shel Olam's fault. It's not our fault. And, it's very similar. If you remember, when the Beis HaMikdash was burning, the Kohanim went to the roof of the Beis HaMikdash and they said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we are not trustworthy to be your custodians, then you take the keys. They threw the keys up into the Shemayim, to the sky, and a hand grabbed those keys. So the point basically is, our job is to communicate Torah, to help people grow in Torah. If the Torah is not attractive enough, that would be a false statement. If it's not enough to reach people, then we don't change it. Then it becomes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's responsibility. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that this is the way it is, then this is the way it is. So that's kind of a general perspective. But now to come to the specific issue about extending Shabbos invitations when you know that somebody's going to be Mechal Shabbos, let's describe what the basic Averis are. There are a few things that you need to know, and I'm sure many of you know these basic ideas. And that is, there is an Isser in the Torah, in Parshas Kedoshim, Lifnei Iver Leisitein Michshol, in front of a blind person, you do not put a stumbling block. Now, Chazal understand this Pasuk both literally, don't trip a blind person, obviously, but they also understand it. This is a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, a Braisa of Rabbi Nosson. They also understand this in a figurative, symbolic sense. You are not allowed to cause another person, even a guy, you'll see, to commit a sin.
So the Gemara says, quoting Rabbi Nassan, that I'm not allowed to give wine to a Nazir, right? A Nazir is a person who took a vow not to drink wine. If a Nazir says, please pass the wine, and I pass him the wine, even if he asked for it, I didn't offer it, I am over on the lav of Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitein Michshel. And the second example the Gemara gives is even more surprising, because it applies to a goy. I am not allowed to give Eiver Min HaChai to a goy. What is Eiver Min HaChai? A limb that is severed from an animal while it's still alive is not only forbidden to a Jew, it is actually forbidden to a non-Jew under the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So the same way I would transgress an Aveira by giving a Nazir wine, I would also transgress that same Aveira by giving a non-Jew an Eiver Min HaChai, and that is Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshel. Right? So you're not allowed to cause people to do Averos, meaning you would be considered to be a conspirator, you would be an enabler, you would be a facilitator. And the Torah says that your achrayus is not only not to sin yourself, but not to cause other people sinning. For example, to give you other examples, this could happen in all sorts of businesses and professions. If you are a lawyer and your Jewish client wants to sue another Jew instead of going to a Beis Din, and according to the halacha, a Jew cannot take a Jew to a secular court without the rishus of a Beis Din. Now, even though you're just the lawyer, you're not the actual person deciding to initiate litigation, but you would be causing your fellow Jew to commit a sin. According to that, it might be difficult in some situations for a religious Jew to practice as a litigator. I know Tirza has examples of somebody who wants to write a non-halachic will, a will that changes the Torah's laws of inheritance in ways that are not halachically proper. So even though the sinner, strictly speaking, would be the owner of the property, but you as the attorney would be causing that person to sin, and therefore this is implicated in the lav, the d'oraisa, one of the 613 mitzvos, one of the 365 negative commandments called Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshel. Now, we can't stop there though, because I have to give you another basic bit of information. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says the following very important qualification. The prohibition of Lifnei Iver is only triggered if without you the sin could not have been committed. The example the Gemara gives is that there's a river without a bridge, and you and the wine are on one side of the river, and you have a boat, and the Nazir is on the other side of the river. And the Nazir says, hey, can you bring me the wine? And without you taking the wine to him, he would be unable to commit the sin. But if he and I are sitting at the table, and the Nazir asks me to pass him the wine, but even without me, he could reach over and take it, or he could just get up and take it. This is called in halacha, chad avra dinahara. They're on the same side of the river. Since he could have done the sin with me or without me, by my giving him the instrumentality, I do not transgress the lav of lifnei iver l'sitein michshel. Now, when you walk away from the Gemara, you might get the impression, therefore it's permitted. But in fact, most Rishonim say that even though there is no da'oraisa of lifnei iver l'sitein michshel, there is a rabbinic prohibition to assist somebody in the commission of a sin, even if they could have done it without you. And the name of that rabbinic concept is misayeya. Misayeya just means to assist somebody, lidvar aveira. So it's important to recognize, therefore, now in fact it's a machlokas, the Mordechai in Maseches Avodah Zarah, one of the great Rishonim, actually said there is no way of Misayeya, that's a big chiddush, but that's a das yochid. Tosfos, the Ran, and the Ramon, the Shulchan Aruch, all paskin, there is Misayeya. So to summarize the central concept here is, if a person could not do the sin without my assistance, and I assist him in doing the sin, That is an Isser D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver Leisitei Michshol. If the person, however, could have done the sin, even without my assistance, but I am enabling him, I am helping him out, so there is no Isser D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver Leisitei Michshol, but there is a lav, I'm sorry, there's an Isser D'Rabbanan called Misayeya. So in some of these cases, we're going to apply it to the Shabbos scenario in a moment. So in some of these situations, there's a Lifnei Iver D'Oraisa, and in some of these situations, it is Misayeya L'Dvar Aveira. Now, just to give you the example of the attorney situation, if an attorney is representing you in prohibited litigation that they're not allowed to bring, since there are other lawyers who could do the job, it is very strongly arguable that when you're causing him to sin, you're not over on Lifnei Iver, because he could do it without you. You're only over on the lesser rabbinic offense of Misayeya. Now, that doesn't make it permitted. Rabbinic offenses are also prohibited. But it is interesting to note that it might only be a rabbinic violation. It would not necessarily be a Torah violation. If, however, you as an attorney have unique expertise that nobody else has, and that's pretty rare, maybe Tertz's case, but that's about it, I think, under those circumstances, there would be Lifnei Iver. Or another example, let's say instead of being an attorney, you're a witness. This is where you might be the only one. Let's imagine that Reuven is suing Shimon in court. And this is a prohibited litigation that is not allowed to be brought outside of a Beis Din. And Reuven wants you to testify regarding the transaction. Now, a witness might indeed be irreplaceable, because there may be, in other words, without you, Reuven has no case. You better ask your rabbi, because for you to testify, not for the plaintiff, testifying for the defendant is actually mutter, but if you are going to testify for the plaintiff, and without you, the plaintiff will not be able to establish his case. Now, he'll hate you for it, granted. As a result, he will be able to continue this non-halachic litigation only because of you. For you to testify might be an Isser D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, because you are an indispensable element in that chait. See, with the lawyer, you can only say there are other lawyers. But a witness you might be the only witness. So you might have to tell a friend, maybe you've been involved in this situation, that a friend needs you to testify. Now I do want to point out, talk to a rabbi, because this is much more complicated than you would assume. Because in a lot of litigation, you're actually suing insurance companies. And when you're suing insurance companies, then in point of fact, it's a non-Jewish entity, and it might very well be that Reuven can sue Shimon if it's really Reuven trying to collect from Shimon's liability insurance. So you have to talk to a rabbi. In other words, this is not such a simple thing. But be aware that any time you are asked to be a witness in a civil proceeding brought by a Jew against a Jew, and possibly criminal proceedings as well, you do have potential Lifnei Iver questions, and you need to ask the question whether you are allowed to testify and the like. Okay. Now, so these are our two ideas. Now the Shach was one of the great commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach, by the way, really one of the greatest of the poskim, actually died very young, and he was massacred in the Chelmanitsky massacres in the 1600s. So he was actually a martyr. Died al Kiddush Hashem. By the way, it's not relevant to anything, but I have to tell you such a cute story about the Shach. The Shach at one point had a din Torah against somebody. He felt he was owed money, and he actually was toveya, a person to a din Torah. And of course, the Shach was able to prove his case with brilliant proofs from all over the Talmud, all over all of the Rishonim, and he established a brilliant case. So at the end of the case, the Dayanim retired, they went to learn this, and they came back like a day later, and they said to the Shach, you know, your arguments were so brilliant and convincing, and we were 100% sure after you presented your case that you're right. But then we came across this new commentary on the Shulchan Aruch that totally demolishes all of your proofs and shows that you're wrong, and we have to decide for the other person. Now that commentary that totally demolished the Shach's proofs was the commentary of the Shach himself that had just been published. And the Shach took a great Musar from this, and the great Musar is, when it's your own case, you're biased, as the Torah said, and therefore, when it came to his own case, he didn't even think of all of the arguments he put into his Sefer that destroyed his case. And he says, and that's what the Torah says, that when you're nogeya bedavar, you don't have a disinterested judgment. It's a famous story that Shach used to say about himself. Okay. Now, let's analyze. Now, the truth of the matter is, I invite somebody for Shabbos, and they drive. Now, I'm going to, again, I know you're thinking about it, I offer them a place to stay. I will get to all of those things. But if we just ask the question, if I'm causing him to drive on Shabbos, let's ask the question analytically. Is my transgression the da'oraisa of lifnei iver, or is my transgression the drabanan of misayeya? In other words, how would you pigeonhole it? It actually is not an easy pigeonhole. Because on one hand, even without me, he has the car. Even without me, he can drive. But without my invitation, he wouldn't be driving to my particular house. So there's a little bit of a quandary, even, how you classify this scenario. Does it mean, to be lifnei iver, does it mean he couldn't do the sin without me? Or does it mean he wouldn't do the sin without me? In the case of inviting the person, he could have done the sin without me, but this particular sin he wouldn't have done. So there's a bit of a question, but most poskim assume, and this is an important assumption, that since he has the car and since he can drive and since he probably does drive, then at worst your invitation is not a lifnei iver min haTorah. If you'd give him the car, that would be the problem. But you're not dealing with a lifnei iver min haTorah, but you still are dealing potentially with a misayeya lidvar aveira, which is an iser drabana. Now, that doesn't answer the question yet. When things are rabbinic, right, God forbid, we're not suggesting they are permitted, but at least you can knock it down a notch, and then there might be certain leniencies that one could use. Yes?
What if we change the scenario a drop? It's not a private person.
Okay, I have to obey the orders from the back. I'm sorry. I apologize, but I think a lot of questions will be addressed because there's some important psukim here. And okay, so here is there are different views. First of all, I mentioned the Shach. The Shach asks a stira in the Ramah. The Ramah rules, like Tosfos and the Ran, that even if somebody could commit the sin without me, if I help them do it, I am transgressing a rabbinic law called Misayeya, right? That's what the Ramah says in Orach Chaim, the laws of Shabbos. And yet, in the laws of Avodah Zorah, which are found in Yoridea, the Ramah deals with the following idea. The Ramah deals with the idea that a Jew is not allowed to sell to a non-Jew objects that the non-Jew is going to use in idol worship. So you're not allowed to sell crosses, you're not allowed to sell. Now, let me point out, you may raise a big question that you see plenty of Hasidic jewelers who sell these crosses that people wear. Not plenty, but there are. Not so much in Israel, but in New York, certainly. You can see it. Say again?
Not only Hasidic.
Okay. No, I didn't. I meant even Hasidic Jews. I meant people who would be stricter. So the Ramah says like this. The Ramah says, well, the heter of selling idolatrous objects to Jews, to Goyim, will apply when they could get these objects from other sources anyway, so they could get them even without you. So if they could get them even without you, you're allowed to sell them. But if you're the only person who has them, you're not allowed to sell them. So the Shach asks the obvious kasha, that even if they could get the Avodah Zarah without you, if Lamaisa, you're the one supplying them, at a minimum, there should be a rabbinic prohibition of misayeya l'dvar aveira. You're helping them to commit the sin. So how could the Ramah say it is permitted if the goyim could get the idolatry elsewhere? Shouldn't there be a rabbinic prohibition, which is what the Ramah paskins in Orach Chaim? So the Shach is mechalek, and he says that the prohibition of misayeya only applies to fellow Jews. Meaning, lifnei iver, when you're the indispensable element, that applies to a Jew and to a non-Jew. That's Abram and Achai to a Nazir. But when you're dealing with the rabbinic prohibition of misayaya, that's a special responsibility you owe Jews. That is not a responsibility you owe to non-Jews. Okay. But once again, that doesn't really answer our Shabbos problem. So, there are different arguments here, but let me give you the very important, extremely important and controversial psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Now, this has its genesis in a little bit of mystery. I remember many years ago, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, hearing about a letter that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach sent to the yeshiva of Or Sameach. But this was a letter that was a private letter, not to be published. And even just, I say this because even last week somebody wrote me from the United States, I heard you have a private letter from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, could the contents be revealed? And now the truth of the matter is, so people still think there's Or Sameach has this mysterious secret letter that Or Sameach is allowed to do something that no one else is allowed to do. In truth, it's not really much of a mystery. I mean, because eventually things were published and Rav Shlomo Zalman's Svara is very, very clear. And let me start this way. Rav Shlomo Zalman starts his analysis not with Shabbos. He starts it with another halacha that involves lifnei iver. And that is offering somebody food if they're not going to make a bracha. Did you know that there's actually a law in the Shulchan Aruch, the Feirish, that says, I am not allowed to give a person food or drink unless they will do, if it's bread, netila shadayin, hamotzi, bracha rishona, and bircha samazon. Bracha chrona, whatever it would be. Reason? Because if I give them food and they're not going to make a bracha, I am causing them to sin, and I am transgressing the prohibitions of either lifnei iver or misayaya. Shulchan Aruch says, and the Rama does not argue, cannot offer food to people who don't make brachas. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman was asked, well, what's going on here? I have a chiloni guy come to my house in the middle of the summer. It's 105 degrees outside. He's repairing my air conditioner. He asks me for a glass of water, and I say, well, I'm sorry, are you going to make a bracha? And he says, I don't do that. Well, so I can't offer you the water. So what do you do in such a case? So if Shlomo Zalman says, this is very revolutionary, because it's against the Shulchan Aruch, at least in a literal sense. He says, in such a situation, not only are you permitted to offer food and drink, you are absolutely obligated to offer food and drink. And the reason is the following. The prohibition of causing somebody to sin has to be weighed against the greater sins they will commit if you don't let them sin. Meaning to say the following. If a non-religious person is not offered food and water, they're going to hate Torah, they're going to hate Judaism, they're going to hate religious Jews, and the averos in their attitude and in their actions are going to be a lot worse than the sin of not making the bracha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, in such a situation, the balance of lifnei iver says, better to cause them to sin in a relatively smaller transgression, if that will prevent them from sinning in a much more greater, serious transgression. In other words, he gave the example of amputating a finger to save a life. Are you allowed to amputate? Well, normally not, right? I can't go over to somebody and cut off their finger. That's forbidden. But if you're amputating the finger in order to save a life, that is called a life-saving operation. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's chiddush for lifnei iver, and we're going to apply it for Shabbos, is that although in the abstract it is a sin not to make the bracha before you eat, but if I prevent him from committing that sin, the sins he's going to commit are going to be much, much worse, and it'll destroy his desire to connect to Yiddishkeit and Torah. Then Rav Shlomo Zalman said, there's a mitzvah to be machshil, a mitzvah to cause somebody to commit a smaller sin, if that will be the mechanism that will prevent them from sinning in a greater way. Now, by the same token, Rav Shlomo Zalman therefore says, This is the identical cheshbon that one can make when it comes to inviting somebody for Shabbos in the following way. If you're talking about a Mechal Shabbos, So if you don't invite him, what's going to happen under the case is he's going to be Mechal Shabbos anyway. And if you invite him, so a number of things happen. Number one, there is at least, although you are causing a specific Chilul Shabbos, the Chilul Shabbos of his driving to your house, and it's almost impossible to measure. Well, maybe your house is 10 miles and he would have driven, you know, 8.9 miles without, or vice versa. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says, number one, for the hours that he's in your house, there is Shmira Shabbos, there's Kiddush, and the mitzvahs and the like. And number two, if there is a reasonable outreach potential whereby he might eventually become attached to the same idea that says by Pikuach Nefesh, although we don't apply Pikuach Nefesh directly, desecrate one Shabbos in order that he should be able to keep many Shabboses. Rav Shlomo Zalman argues that in a situation where this can bring a person to Torah, it is the same logic in which be machshil him now in order to create a better environment for long-term consequences. Now, there are a number of conditions. You obviously have to structure things so that at least there's a possibility he will not be Mechal Shabbos. So you have to extend an invitation. And if you're inviting 300 people to a Shabbaton, that means you have to have accommodations for 300 people, if that's necessary. You should indicate that there's a preference to be here for all of Shabbos because of the Shabbos experience and everything else. But if Achar HaMaisa, the person basically says, I'm coming Shabbos morning, and that's why, by the way, the invitation should be a Friday night invitation instead of a Shabbos day invitation. Because when you invite somebody Friday night, you can say, we'd like you to be here before Shabbos. And by the way, once they come, you can not confiscate, but lose the keys or whatever it would be. When you invite them specifically for Shabbos morning, you're not even giving them the opportunity to stay. So Rav Shlomo Zalman does say there are conditions in which you have to at least make it possible and even desirable for them to stay for Shabbos. But if Achar HaMaisa, they're going to drive, he says you do not withdraw the invitation, because there is the potential to bring people to Torah, and this is the same analogy as giving the chiloni the food in order to prevent more serious avers. Now, what's a little ambiguous is the following. Rav Shlomo Zalman was addressing an organization that has Shabbatots, where there's a kiruv potential. How does that apply to me as an individual, where I'm simply inviting people? Well, it's a bit more questionable. On the other hand, if I'm going to have an ongoing relationship with a person, I'm going to learn with them, I'm going to talk to them during the week, I'm going to try to build a kesher with them, then l'chaira the same heter would apply. But what if it's a one-time social event? What if it's like a bar mitzvah? What if it's, in other words, it's not a kiruv situation? Do I say that the benefit, even for that Shabbos alone, justifies it? Because they have Kiddush, they have benching, they have Shmira Shabbos for a few hours, or is Rav Zalman's Heter predicated on potential long-term benefit? Or do I even say that one Shabbos might have a long-term benefit? Right? These are questions that are not entirely clear. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who is not known as a Mekel by any means, seems to permit even one-time invitations. He says even if it's somebody you're not going to be inviting again, but he says you're getting him off the street, you're getting him into a Jewish home, you never know the potential of a Shabbos. The condition, once again, is you do have to offer them good accommodations for all of Shabbos. This is the famous Pesach of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and as I say, Rav Moshe Sternbach does not quote Rav Shlomo Zalman, but he comes to the same conclusion. And the lumdus of the Cheshbon is that Lifnei Iver is to prevent people from stumbling, and if by doing a smaller aveira they will be zocha to do more mitzvahs later, it's not called a michshol. It is not called a michshol. You're not stumbling. You're not causing them to stumble, because there is an ultimate tayeles shebedavor, provided that you're not creating a circumstance where they have no choice and must violate Shabbos. because you're offering them accommodations. So now you are privy to the secret Or Sameach letter, which again it's published. It's not. I shouldn't spread it around, but okay. But yeah, no. Again, as I say, I think it very much depends. Meaning to say, if you're simply having, you know, a good time, if the Shabbos is not, of course, the person has to judge. If the quality of the Shabbos experience is kind of just kind of killing time or just recreation or they put the TV on a timer or something, it probably would not be kedai to cause a chilul Shabbos for that type of Shabbos. But if it's something, and you have to be honest, that I don't say has to, because you never know that it will, but if it's something that may have the potential to be makarev somebody to Torah and to Yiddishkeit, then the poskim are very, very lenient. Now let me tell you this. Rav Shlomo Zalman brings a fascinating raya to this yisod from an obscure text of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Now this is a bit of a complicated psak, but it's a fascinating proof. And that is here is the case of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. One of the lavin in the Torah is that a man is not allowed to shave his beard with a razor. You can use scissors, but you can't use a tar. You cannot use a razor. And the same halachas apply to the payas. That you don't have to have growing payas that come out, but you cannot use a razor to cut the payas. Now the Torah says there's separate lav for cutting and a separate lav to be cut, meaning to say a Jewish barber who does it to a Jewish man, the Jewish man transgresses the prohibition of being cut, and the Jewish barber transgresses the prohibition of cutting. Therefore, if a person gives himself his own haircut, he actually transgresses two separate prohibitions. The prohibition of being the barber, and the prohibition of being the person who's being cut. Now, these prohibitions don't apply to a woman, interestingly enough, because since a woman doesn't have the thing to be cut, she also doesn't have the prohibition of a barber. So technically, if a woman, I'm not answering the question, can a woman be a barber for a man, putting that aside, but let's say it's his wife or his daughter, that's an ikar din. A woman actually could be a barber for a man because it's professional, but be it as it may, if a woman cuts the hair of the man transgresses being cut. The woman does not transgress cutting, because a woman doesn't have that iser. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger raises this question though. Can a woman cut a man, because even though she doesn't transgress the sin of giving haircuts, she's causing the man to be over on the iser of getting a haircut. So is she overet on lifnei iver lo site michshol? Is she causing the man to sin? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says the following. If without her assistance he would give himself the shave, she's actually benefiting him. Because if he would give himself the shave, he would have two sins. If she gives him the shave, right? So imagine, this is an Eishes Chayil, a new avenue for an Eishes Chayil. You're married to a guy who's going to use a single blade razor on his beard. So his wife should volunteer to do it for him. Because basically, if his wife does it, Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, he is only transgressing the Aveira. Now, she's not transgressing anything. She has no prohibitions here. But she's causing him to transgress the Aveira of being shaved. But if he does it himself, he's doing two Aveiras. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, a woman, again, in Mamash Sheinei Shishchayel has many, many different modalities. A woman may cause and must cause her husband to transgress one, if in the absence of her intervention he would transgress two. So Rav Shlomo Zalman uses this obscure Rebbe Akiva Eiger to establish the proposition that I can cause the Mechalel Shabbos to drive to my place if in the long run it can prevent other Aveiros from taking place, or give the Chiloni a bracha, food without a bracha, because it'll prevent him from hating the Torah, and it might give him a positive feeling towards Yiddishkeit. Okay, this is the famous psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and it's based on this Haggah of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in the Shulchan Aruch. Again, it's a little bit of a problem actually, because Rabbi Akiva Eiger does not say for sure that this is the halacha. He says it appears that's the halacha. Rabbi Akiva Eiger himself is not entirely sure, but Rosh Shlomo Zalman wants to use this Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Now, most contemporary poskim are in fact mekel. They follow Rav Shlomo Zalman's Orbach's Psak. This is how Kiruv organizations do operate, both in the United States and in Eretz Yisrael. We have Shabbatons, and there will unfortunately be Chilul Shabbos. We try to create accommodations, and we try to encourage people to stay. But if they drive, we don't ask questions, and we don't turn them away, and we know ahead of time. But let me just mention that there is a gigantic shita, a gigantic posek, who held that all of this was usher. And this posek was none other than Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe Feinstein was considered to be, at least in the United States, in Eretz Yisrael as well, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, posek of the latter half of the 20th century. And Reb Moshe had a tshuva going back to the 1950s about synagogue programming, which created Shabbatons that would invite children from faraway neighborhoods who would, in all probability, drive, even if they were offered accommodations. And Rav Moshe Feinstein said it was usher to do. Or in other words, you actually have to say nobody should come. Now again, even Rav Moshe is not suggesting you kick a kid out if he shows up. But Rav Moshe is basically saying you have to make clear that if you're going to drive, you know, you can't come. Now, Rav Moshe had a very creative reason, because Rav Moshe said the following. This is a big chiddush, tremendous chiddush. He said, everybody thinks causing a Jew to sin is either lifnei iver or misayeya, right? And those are the different categories. Rav Moshe says there's a third category, and that is something called mesis. Now, what is mesis? Mesis is a category when you entice somebody to sin. In other words, Rav Moshe says, lifnei iver and misayeya is when you ask me to pass you the ham sandwich, or you as a nuzer ask me to give you the wine, so if you couldn't get the wine without me, lifnei iver. If you could get the wine without me, misayeya. But all of that is when you're asking me for the wine. What if I go over to a nuzer and I say, would you like some wine? Rav Moshe's Mechadesh, that's a much more serious Aveira. That is not the Aveira of Lifnei Iver. That's the Aveira of actual enticement called Mesis. Now, let me explain, this is a tremendous Chiddush, because let me explain this. If you learned the Sugya of Mesis, you would think, from the Chumash itself, by the way, that mesis is a special law of idolatry. Mesis is when I entice you to do avodah zarah, and the Torah says I get killed and don't have rachamim on me. We normally don't look at mesis for other averus. I mean, we normally look at it lifnei iver and misayeya. We don't use the term mesis for other averus. But Rav Moshe's big chiddush, this is only Rav Moshe says this. Rav Moshe's big chiddush is that even though the capital punishment for mesis is only for idolatry, the love of mesis applies whenever you are actively encouraging somebody to sin. Meaning, lifnei iver is when they want to sin and you help them, but when you actively encourage them, you are called a mesis. And his proof is the following. Rav Moshe has to have a proof, because the Gemara never uses mesis outside of Avodah Zarah. Rav Moshe's proof is the following. The Gemara says that we show no rachamim for a mesis. We don't look for mitigating circumstances. We don't look for defenses. And the proof is that the nachash is described as a mesis. The nachash enticed Adam and Chava to eat, and even though he had an excuse, who says they should have listened to me? But ain't telling them. We don't give defenses to a mesis. Now, Rav Moshe argues, hey, the nachash wasn't telling them to worship Avodah Zarah. The nachash was just telling them to eat the forbidden fruit. So you see that you're still called a mesis. Okay, Lamaisa, that's a very difficult raya, because many look at the Eitz Hadas as a form of Avodah Zarah, a rebellion against Hashem. But that's Rav Moshe's Chiddush. So Rav Moshe's argument is, when a synagogue or a Shabbaton or a Kiruv organization has an event that is inviting people to come, It is not simply helping somebody sin, it is actively encouraging. So Rav Moshe's analysis was, he looked at it mitam mesis, and therefore none of these heterim are going to work. So this was Rav Moshe's shita. Now, Rav Moshe wrote that in the 50s, you know, would he have changed his mind? You know, I don't know, I mean, there's no particular reason why his tshuva would have changed with the passage of time. I mean, the analysis is still there. So we do have a huge machlokas. We have Rav Shlomo ben Orbach and Rav Sternbach, Moshe Sternbach, versus Rav Moshe. It seems that in spite of Rav Moshe's tremendous godless in Torah, it seems that the consensus in most of the Torah world is to be fairly lenient, although, as I indicated, we might not apply this leniency for social Shabbos and the like, only for spiritual type Shabbos experiences. Rav Shmuel Vosner of Bnei Brak, Rav Vosner is also machmir, like, not for Rav Moshe's reason, but he's also machmir. So, you know, different poskim will say different things, but as I say, based on the secret or Sameach letter, we do rely on that particular heter. Now, just to end with a few comments here. You know, once you think about the Lifnei Iver and causing people to sin, you get into all sorts of difficult complications. Oh yeah, let me point out, on this subject itself, that the Chazon Ish did not address inviting people for Shabbos, but it seems that the Chazon Ish would say that you're not allowed to. And let me tell you why. The Chazon Ish deals with a law of Shemitah, which is going to be relevant too. And the Chazon Ish comments on a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Maseches Shavuos, which is about Shemitah, talks about if you have a business, you have a hardware store, what are you allowed to sell to people, to farmers, who don't keep the Shemitah laws? So the Mishnah actually says, you are not allowed to sell agricultural implements to a farmer during Shemitah who does not keep the Shemitah laws. I cannot sell him a plow, etc., because it's Lifnei Iver, I'm causing him to sin. However, you can sell him implements that might be used for permissible purposes and might be used for impermissible. For example, you can sell him a cow. Now, a cow, in those days, could be used for plowing, or a cow could be used for milking or even shechting. So the Mishnah makes the difference. You can't sell him something that for sure will be used for sin, but you can sell him something that might be used for sin if there's a possibility it might be used for a permissible use. Now, the Chazon Ish gives the following reasoning. Why am I allowed to sell him something that might be used for sin? It might be used for sin. So the Chazon Ish uses Rav Orbach's Svarab to say, but yes, if you refuse to do business with him, he'll hate the Torah, he'll reject Yiddishkeit. So Chazal say it is kedai to give him something that he might sin with in order to prevent him from hating Torah. Now, according to that though, you only use that reasoning if it's something he might sin with. If it's something he will sin with, you can't. See, Rav Shlomo Zalman is using this reasoning even to allow a definite sin, like eating without a bracha. By implication, the Chazon Ish takes Rav Orbach's reasoning, well, of course he was before Rav Orbach, but he only applies it to a Sabek Aveira, not to a Vadai Aveira, so it would stand to reason, according to the Chazon Ish, you couldn't use this Shikol if you know for sure there's going to be Chilul Shabbat. So by extension, it would appear, by implication, not by direct statement, by implication, it would appear that the Chazon Ish would not accept the heter when you know there's going to be a Chilul Shabbos. It's only when it's a Suffolk that you would be allowed to do this. Now, once you get into this, there are many, many questions. We don't have time to explore them today. I'll just throw them out. If I have a catering hall, right, so it's a live issue. Am I allowed to rent out my wedding hall to places that are going to events that are going to have mixed dancing and the like? Now, it's not lifnei iver because they can go to another hall. So I'm not the indispensable cause, but am I misayaya? I'm helping them commit sin. If I'm a landlord, can I rent out my apartment to people who don't keep taras and mishpacha? You want to start thinking about this. Or in the United States, or maybe even in Tel Aviv, or maybe Yerushalayim, chas v'shalom, to a gay couple. Now, because I'm giving them the residence, I'm giving them the dira, where they could do all sorts of aveiros. Again, technically it's not lifnei iver, because they could do it without you, but are you called a misayeya? Are you assisting them by giving them the home, by giving them the... Now, I don't know about Israeli law, in the United States, in many, many states, it would absolutely be illegal. If you were to refuse to rent out to a gay couple, you could, you might even go to jail, but at least you could be fined because it's discrimination and the like. And certainly, Tyrus and Mishpacha, as far as I know, even the most firm landlord is not machmir to say, I'm not going to rent out my dira to a couple that doesn't keep Tyrus and Mishpacha. So there, the Maisa, the poskim do give us a heter. The Maharsham is Rav Shalom Mordechai Shvadran. You may have heard of the great Rav Shvadran, who was the famous Maggid of Yerushalayim. This was his grandfather. He was named after his grandfather. Maharsham was one of the greatest, maybe not so well known to people, but he was really one of the greatest poskim in Galicia before World War I. And the Maharsham actually dealt with this issue of renting out your apartment, renting a dira to people that are Mechalel Shabbos, even Mechalel Shabbos or Kashrus or not Taurus and Mishpacha. And he actually did permit it based on the idea that since you don't know for sure what they're going to be doing, and there are many permitted things they'll be doing in the Dira as well, so it's similar to the Shemitah situation where I could give the cow to the guy that doesn't keep Shemitah, because a cow could also be used for milking and a cow could be used for shechting, and therefore it's not inevitable that a sin is going to be committed, so we have such a terror. But once again, what this reminds us of, and again this is a good thought for the 3 weeks generally, is this: all of these laws are a deep expression of Kol Yisrael Ravens Elazar. When you go down to the bottom line, the notion that I'm not just responsible for me. No, I'm firm, I do mitzvahs, I'm fine, what happens to everyone else is their problem. No, the whole law of lifnei iver misayeya is predicated on the idea that I do have an achrayas, not only for the quality of my Torah observance, but to do what I can to help others, and certainly not to cause them to sin, because as the Talmud Yerushalmi says, we're all in one boat on this turbulent sea, and if there's a hole in the boat, everybody sinks. So the fact that it's not under me or it's under somebody else, that doesn't really make a difference at all, because we are ki ish echad uvalev echad, and we know, I've mentioned many, many times Benjamin Franklin's remark that we have to hang together or we'll surely hang separately. He said it about the American Revolution. But for Am Yisrael, it absolutely is true. The Sfas Emes says, and vihi sheyamdo lavoseinu, he says, "B'derech drush, shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu l'chaloseinu," which is translated, of course, it is not only one that tries to destroy us, but he retranslates it. Shelo echad bilvad, it is only the fact that we are not one that is amad aleinu l'chaloseinu. That when there's achdus of Am Yisrael, Hashem gives us the siyata d'shmaya. So during this time when we have to think about the tikkun of sinas chinam, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us that achdus, and may Kol Yisrael be zocheh to Yeshua and a Geulah.